our key off-season signing in the July, August, summer months. Our new NHL insider joining us Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We kind of had a trial run in July. Worked out good. The kid's got some good potential. So we said, let's welcome him back. TSN hockey insider Dave Poulin. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Doing great, J.R. Simmer. Great to be joining you. And I was a little confused. Is this an eight-year deal, or is it a bridge deal, or are we somewhere in between? Because I think both sides are happy, so
yes.
That's good news.
Well, Dave, we spent weeks and weeks and weeks going back and forth. No, it was about 3 minutes in total, I think it was. So, anyway.
And also to that, Pooley, there was a trio of signings, and I just wonder, as a line, how effective do you think yourself, Mike Johnson, and Jamie Baker would be? I mean, how's this looking? Too much of one thing?
Tell you what. I think we'd be just fine. Because we all have way more offense in our games than we had when we played. We're way smarter now. We're announcers. Are you kidding me? If I'd have done life backwards and announced first and then managed and then coached and then played, can you imagine how good I'd have been? Because it's way easier to do the other three than it is to play.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we're really, really looking forward to having you on this year. I think it's going to be absolutely fantastic getting your insight, and you're going to be doing a bunch of games for TSN television as well, so you'll be watching games live in person. So let's get to the biggest story here in Ottawa, which continues to be Brady Tkachuk, who remains unsigned. We're now about a week into training camp, and I want to ask you for a status update. We can get that from the likes of Darren Dreger, but in your opinion, Brady Tkachuk missing time in training camp, has it reached a stage where it's starting to become concerning for you, or still too early?
No, I don't like it at all, JR. I don't like missing camp at all. And the longer it goes, you know, I think it is a factor. Now, he's a young guy, and it's not about being in shape or anything, but, you know, being in camp is different. You're with the guys, and there's just that little step in each game that'll just help a little bit, you know. If you're playing six exhibition games as a team, you want to play probably three or four as an individual. And it's all about timing. And that's what it was. I mean, always for me, it was about timing. And no matter what you do away from camp, you can't get that timing without playing and being in camp every day. So there's a deal there to be made. And, you know, whether it's exact term that one or the other side wants, or exact numbers or whatever it is, but there's a deal there somewhere to be made. And I really think it's got to buckle down early this week, and that they've got to get it done. And if, you know, if one side is a little less happy than the other side, so be it. But certainly with the numbers that they've talked about and the term, each side always looks for perfection in a deal. And sometimes the deal has to get done without perfection for either side.
With the pressure point, to me, Pooley, more on the club side, is it basically you approach this week of whatever you have to do, you get it done without doing anything stupid?
Yeah, I think so. You're still working within your team's cap structure. And the idea of getting Shabbat done was that Shabbat would be the best player and he'd be the top cap number. Well, you know, if a player outperforms Shabbat's contract or the market outperforms it, then, you know, then that's when the discussions start. But really, it's about your own structure. And, you know, you're looking at the overall picture now and saying, you know, it's likely that you're projecting that Brady Tkachuk is going to be your best forward in the next number of years. Now, there's some pretty good players in that group. You know, Stützle comes to mind as being someone that could push that envelope with Brady Tkachuk. But, you know, you've got some other good young players in Norris and Pinto. Batherson is signed now. But what you're trying to do is set your own internal cap with Brady Tkachuk as, you know, as the guy who's going to get the number. So that's what it is. It's about that number and how that's going to project into the overall cap and then the league cap. But it's your team cap and your team structure that you're trying to get organized first.
Dave, it would appear all the talk has been that the sticking point right now in the negotiation is over structure. And if we're kind of read between the lines and look at things, it's probably over bonus money. The Sens have not negotiated a contract with anybody, any player who got bonus money since Bobby Ryan, we believe, which is dating back now a number of years. How do you, as a former management person in the league, how do you kind of get over philosophical lines in the sand when you also want to get a key player signed?
Well, there's a complexity to this too, JR, because right now with the amount of escrow being paid, we're seeing deals that have gone the other way where they're more back-end loaded. than they are front end loaded with signing bonuses. And that's, you know, so within a year it may be a signing bonus, but overall structure, because of the amount of escrow being paid as the players pay catch up on this whole pandemic thing, you know, it's actually better to keep the number lower in the first couple of years because the escrow is higher. So you're paying, you know, a percentage on more money versus less money. And so that's one factor that normally wouldn't weigh in. But the signing bonus thing became, you know, a thing that I guess high revenue teams looked at, and Toronto being the classic case. I mean, they were on July 1st, the amount of monies they were paying out, you know, I think Matthews and Marner were both in excess of $15 million on consecutive July 1st, and then $750,000 contracts during the year. So they were getting that huge paycheck on July 1st, and not every team's going to be able to do that. I mean, they're just not from a revenue standpoint. And so that is where the sticking point comes in. But once again, you look after your internal cap, and you're the Ottawa Senators, and you're doing business in the NHL, but you're doing business as the Ottawa Senators, and you've got to do what's best for your hockey club. And so that's where arguably the sticking point comes in. And you don't want to get into a situation with all the number of contracts that you're going to have to negotiate in the next 3 or 4 years to set the precedent with one player.
I don't understand, Pooley. Is that what it is, a precedent in a sense of if it's a backloaded contract, I can't for the life of me understand why a signing bonus would be an issue because I'm actually holding on to money at the front that I'll just give you a bit in the back. Is it just not wanting to do that? Is it wanting to avoid? Because I've seen or talked to some people who think also that he's looking for a crazy balloon salary. But if that's an unrestricted free agency, who cares?
Right. Well, you know, you look at it, it's within a year as well. It's not just, you know, so say we're talking about a 6-year deal and the number is higher overall in the years of the last part of the contract. But within that year, you know, it's a July 1st payment. I mean, that's not going to change in terms of what your revenue streams are, Simmer. You're still going to get revenue streams over the course of a year, 5 years from now. And so you're trying to avoid that front end within a year, not just within a contract.
Yeah, I understand that. But in sheer economics on a 6-year deal, Pooley, if the first couple of years I've saved that money, all right, I would do is simply tuck it in the bank and I'm paying it down the road. It's actually a benefit to me no matter where my revenue stream is at.
No, you're right about that, Simmer. And that's, you know, now we're into banking and we're into the financial part of it. Yeah. And you're exactly right. And maybe it's just philosophically that you don't want to do that.
All right, well, let's get to the guys that are with the Sens right now. They had a game and a win last night. One of the jobs that's up for grabs here in Ottawa is the second-line center position. Chris Tierney had, by all accounts, you didn't even have to watch the games. The stats spoke for themselves, but he had a real off year last year. But he's being given the first opportunity to grab the second-line center position between Connor Brown and Timmy Stützle. But you've got a real good young prospect in Shane Pinto, who has done nothing to disappoint so far in an audition last year and in the early part of camp this year. How do you kind of see this all playing out, and where do you think DJ Smith is coming at it from?
Well, the beauty of it is going to play out, and Pinto got off to a great start last night. Before he played last year, I had one of his really early games last year when he came into the league, and so I had called some people, you know, some contacts in the NCAA to talk about him as a player, and they talked about how well-rounded his game is and how unusual it was for a player. I mean, he not only won the player of the year, he won the defensive player of the year. Well, that's sort of unprecedented at any junior level or college level where a high-profile offensive player is also that well-rounded defensively at that age. He is, guys. And you know, I did a couple of his games last year, and I couldn't have been more impressed with the way he handles himself away from the puck. And, you know, even last night, you know, I was just making notes through the game, you know, and I have this little system where I put names into my phone with time codes, and the name Pinto appeared like 8 times in the first 2 periods. And at the start of the third period, he made consecutive plays with his stick, one in the neutral zone and one where he got a good scoring opportunity at the top of the circles, defensive stick. And I simply put, he's the best player in the game right now. Like, he's the best player in the game. Now, this was long before the overtime goal, in which, if you just break down that goal and the thought process of a young player, he knows he's out there against 3 forwards. He knows Andrew Kopp is one of them. Kopp is the best defensively. He attacks Ehlers first, and then Ehlers and Pierre-Luc Dubois flip off. And now, as he rounds the net behind the net, he knows that he has Pierre-Luc Dubois right on his hip. But he waits until he gets into a better scoring position at the top of the slot, and then he almost, like, Pierre-Luc Dubois wouldn't know Shane Pinto as a player, and he doesn't know that maybe Pinto has another half a step that he's not going at right now. And so when he hits the top of the circle, he's a right-hand shot, he explodes just a little half step and then releases the puck all in one motion. Well, that's pretty impressive for a young player. And as impressed as I was with the goal, it was his play away from the puck last night. It was his face-offs. It was the fact that he was playing on the power play in the slot when he had a great opportunity. He had a couple of good setups to Ennis. But his penalty kill positioning is really, really good. And so, you know, when you say going into camp, this is the way, hypothetically, it's going to work with Tierney in the second hole, you're respectfully saying Tierney's an NHL veteran. Tierney's better suited as a third-line center. And if Pinto takes the job, then that's okay. And, you know, I know the development model says a young player should play in the American Hockey League, that this is why Norris came into the league ready, or Batherson is much more ready now than he's been. But, guys, if a guy's ready to play, he's ready to play. And I don't think you can take one model, and, you know, just as we talked about Simmer with contracts, and say this is the way we're going to do it. I think you've got to be flexible. And you've got to say, if a player's ready to help us, because number 12 in the Senators jersey was best player on the ice last night, guys. And the other team has some good players too. He's a really, really good young player. And I don't get ahead of myself and say, you know, that I don't say this easily. You know, we watched him last year and, you know, in a dozen games, and he was pretty steady. And now he's come in and he just looks comfortable out there. There's a comfort to his game that, believe me, gives DJ Smith comfort, because I can tell when he's putting them out there to take face-offs and be in situations. So I think you're just really encouraged and you let it play out.
Yeah,
you continue to play him and let him go.
It doesn't feel like it's being forced, and at the same time, you don't want to say, well, just because he's better then, because the Sens still are very thin. But how important is also, Poole, if you want to get off to a good start, to maybe not waste too much time with Stutzla, Tierney, and Connor Brown, in the sense of, if ultimately that's going to be Pinto, by the time you roll through this weekend, you should probably make that change versus on the eve of the opening, should you not?
I think you'll see it through the week. You know, if they think that's the way it's going to go, you'll see it. You'll give it a couple of games. You'll probably... ideally, you'd like to play your last two exhibition games with a pretty full lineup, Simmer, and I think you'll see it by that point.
Be interesting on the back end as well, Dave. They brought in Michael Delzato as a free agent. They have they've said as much, that he and Zaitsev will at least start camp as the so-called shutdown pair. But Erik Brännström has been pretty decent, and a nice shootout goal. Not that he's being paid for shootout goals, but and Victor Mete. Where do you come down on this whole idea of size on defense? Because it's a big debate here in Ottawa. Can you have 2 5-foot-9 guys as part of your 6-man mix on defense?
I think it's tough. I really do. Now, you know, those guys are used to playing at that size. They didn't just get to that size. And that's where, you know, Victor Mete is a little bit more experienced. He knows leverage. He knows positioning. He doesn't put himself in bad positions. I just think it's tough. And if you have better options, if they're the best player, they're the best player, then size is a side. But if you have options in order to develop, then I think you've got to look at them as well. I don't think you get to play because you're bigger. You have to be better. But, you know, it's tough in today's NHL with the size of the forwards, and particularly positioning in front of the net. And it is going to be even more with the introduction that the big guys can't just cross-check anymore, that you're going to have to be more creative in the way you leverage and the way you use your body and the way you use your feet to get in position. So, you know, I think it can work with Mete and Brännström, but I think long-term, you know, it's tough, and particularly in a playoff series, when you get into real battles, if you have options that are bigger, you know, that they may play into effect.
Thoughts on Shabbat and Zub playing together?
Yeah, I like it. Zub, you know, really emerged last year as a really quiet force. And to me, we're back to the partner conversation. Simmer, you and I have had this conversation about how important I think a partner is in the National Hockey League with a star defenseman, and that's what you're trying to develop. You're trying to create as much space for Thomas Chabot as you can, so he is so comfortable doing everything that he can do. And Zub seems to be a guy that can do that, and very understated, but very, very steady, doesn't attract attention to himself. And, you know, and I think, you know, when you look at partners in Mark Methot, you had one of the better partners in recent history, in my mind, that played with Erik Karlsson when he was at his absolute best, and Karlsson just didn't have to worry about that side of the ice or the front of the net or the corners. He could just be Carlson.
The Sens made a trade on the weekend and brought in Zach Sanford from St. Louis, 26-year-old left winger, had 10 goals in 52 games last year, 16 the year before that, but making a bit too much money for where the Blues can put him at. What do you think of Sanford, the player, and how do you think he fits in for Ottawa?
I think it's a nice management move. You're looking around the league and seeing, and when you think of salary cap, issues or pressure, you're not thinking of a $2 million a year guy, but that's exactly where you can look to steal a good player. And you know, they may have gotten a little more than people realize in Zach Sanford. And I go back, I think he was a 2013 draft. I know I was still in the business, so it was 13 or 14. I think it was 13. And, you know, he comes out and he was on our radar. He actually started in the Eastern Junior League before he went to the USHL. And then he, you know, had a couple of years at Boston College. So a player like that is coming out of the world that I lived in, and I followed him. Big kid and pretty good hands and modest success in the NHL. 30 points is his most, but you know, I think it's a nice pickup for them. And it also is probably spurred by, you know, if you go back to the drafting of Logan Brown, you say, okay, well, Josh Norris and Shane Pinto have come onto the scene, and they're both young guys, and it looks like for those two, the center position is going to be pretty secure, you know, moving forward. And they pass Logan Brown. And when they do that, and you have a chance to take an asset and still, you know, get something back for him, then I think it's a good move. I really do. And that's where you can sort of pick off players that are below, you know, the high profile salary cap pressure things that we normally think about.
Yeah, certainly a fresh start. Do you think at the end of the day, Logan Brown ends up back in the American League this year, Pulley?
I do. I think, you know, they would know him really well. He grew up in that town, and, you know, they would know him and feel they have a really good handle on him and how they can better develop him. And it's a chance for them to put a big young centerman in their system. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he started in the American League.
All right. On that note, we'll put a wrap on the first installment of many to come over the next days, weeks, and months. Great stuff, Dave. Appreciate you checking in. We're going to give you a day off tomorrow. I want to think about what you've done here this morning. We'll give you a send along a scouting report and bring you back on Wednesday and update you on what you need to get better at, okay?
Perfect. Okay. Have a great day, guys. I love it. I'm always, always on edge, so that's a good thing.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Have a great day.
Chat Wednesday.